Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us today. Human trafficking remains a big problem in Florida. There have been cases of immigrants from China and Latin America coming to the U.S. seeking legitimate work, but then they find themselves entrapped in a cycle of sex and labor that's nearly impossible to break out of. Now, the issue was launched into the national spotlight this past February with the arrest of New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft at a massage parlor in Jupiter. Lawmakers this session pushed new legislation that would tackle the human trafficking crisis through a number of different avenues. Democratic State Senator Lauren Book was behind the legislation that awaits the governor's signature. She's also been an outspoken voice on women's reproductive rights. Yesterday, she came out with a statement and an interesting proposal in response to the restrictive Alabama abortion law that was just signed by their governor. She joins us now on Sundial. Senator Book, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with the law in Alabama. This is the big news right now. From your understanding, under what circumstances would it be legal for a woman to have an abortion in Alabama?
Right now, as it stands, as the bill was signed yesterday, it would be health of the woman. And so if it were an ectopic pregnancy, an abortion may be performed. But other than that, there is no exemption for rape, for incest. Nothing else is contemplated. And what's really, truly terrifying is that these providers will be sentenced under the felony guidelines in the bill to up to 99 years for performing an abortion, for providing life-saving medical care to women in the state of Alabama. It is unconscionable that this is where we are in our world. And more terrifying than any of that is that women make up to 51% of the population of Alabama, but there were only four women in that Senate chamber representing them. And it is truly, truly horrifying.
There was legislation that came up in Tallahassee in this session. It would require minors to receive parental consent in Florida prior to having the procedure. That ultimately failed. What were the conversations surrounding that bill in the legislature?
Well, that was actually heard in one of my committees in health policy, and it would have required both parents providing consent, again, with no exemption for rape or incest. It was highly, highly controversial. And we actually had abortion providers coming in talking about the judicial waiver process, because if a young woman or a woman could not get the parental waiver, there is a judicial bypass that they can access. And so my office and I spent hours calling through to different clerk of courts throughout the state. And many of them did not know what we were asking about. And yet we want these young women to navigate this process, all while trying to navigate some really tough decisions that they have to make. And it did not get its second hearing. It did pass in the House, however. And that is where we are in our world. We are waging war against women. I find it to be interesting. I think about Kamala Harris asking a question of now Justice Kavanaugh about laws that the government has kind of power to regulate men's bodies. And there isn't any. And yet we continue to chip away at women's reproductive health care, their reproductive rights. And, I can't think of a more cruel and unusual punishment than to require a woman to carry a baby to term if she does not want to, after a sexual assault or after a case of incest. It is just a terrifying place that we are living in.
And speaking of Kamala Harris, she, of course, from California, one of the candidates running for president, you want to craft legislation for next year's session that would require equal representation when it comes to new laws restricting access to abortion. Can you give us a preview of what that would look like?
Absolutely. You know, American democracy is built on the value of representation, and the joint resolution really stems from that core value to say no vote about women without women. It spans across all the political spectrums, but it would require that a measure to be put on the ballot to empower Floridians to vote, that if we're going to look at women's reproductive health care and their rights, states that 50% of those that are making those laws and making those decisions be women. If abortion were to be taken away from women, women should be sitting at the table helping to make those decisions.
So that all comes down to who's being voted into office. If you don't have enough women in office, then it can never be brought up then.
Correct. Correct. That is correct.
Have you heard anybody responded to this? Anybody reached out to you? The lawmakers talked to you about this?
I've talked to some of my colleagues and in the last 24 to 48 hours who truly are outraged and horrified at the things that are happening in Alabama, in Georgia with the heartbeat ban. You know, we are under attack, and people may think that this is far afield. I think that taking away a woman's fundamental right to access to healthcare is far afield and is deplorable and the definition of unconscionable. Again, requiring a woman who has been sexually assaulted to carry a baby to term is cruel and unusual punishment, in my opinion. And if women need to be sitting at the table when decisions are being made about their rights and their ability to navigate life.
And pundits have said that what we've seen in Georgia and Alabama is basically a push to bring this up to the Supreme Court and challenge Roe v. Wade. So, you know, depending on what the U.S. Supreme Court does next, do you think that plays a role in you pushing forward this legislation next year, or are you still pushing it anyway?
I'm still pushing it regardless. Again, I believe that we have to be represented. It's a core democratic principle and value. And if we are going to be making decisions about women's reproductive health care, women's reproductive rights, then women need to be at the table. And again, there are no laws on the books that regulate men's bodies or the things and healthcare options that they have. Why are women why are roadblocks being put in front of women every single day? And I think about, you know, the totality of this issue and where we've come from, you know, in the 50s and the 60s when abortion, started to become, you know, this issue that it is today. You know, women had to go before a tribunal, basically, of doctors, white men, and they had to beg for a procedure that dealt with their body. And 9 times out of 10, those women were told, yes, we'll give you an abortion, but you also have to be sterilized. And then there was a time in our history, not too long ago, in the 60s, where women had to go to back alleys and use hangers to terminate pregnancies. I know that people think this is hyperbolic, that this is not going to occur. This is a real reality for my daughter, who is 2 years old, that we are putting these roadblocks in place now and today. I think about her choices, her decisions, and we must be paying attention. This is not an Alabama issue. This is not a Georgia issue. This is a women's human rights issue.
I'm talking with Democratic State Senator Lauren Book, representing Florida's 32nd district. We have been talking about her response to the recent passing of the restrictive abortion bill in Alabama. I want to switch things up a little bit because I wanted to talk to you about another bill that is awaiting Governor Ron DeSantis' signature, this dealing with the issue of human trafficking, something you pushed very hard for in this session. This is a problem that you've been working on for a number of years. Do you believe that the bill was propelled, though, by the media coverage surrounding the arrest of New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft back in Palm Beach County? Did that play a role in helping get this forward?
You know, I think that that good legislation takes time. I think that we had a House and Senate that were committed to looking at this issue and looking at it in a comprehensive manner. This bill that passed is a comprehensive approach to human trafficking and combating human trafficking. It has many different components to it that I'm really proud of, but this is not a one-stop that will fix and solve human trafficking. I think that all of those things play a part, but I think also too the fact that we have major large scale events like the Super Bowl, like the national championship coming to our state. We definitely have a lot of work to do.
And you talk about there are a number of facets in this legislation. Let's try to hit a couple of these. One of them being proposed is creating a list for soliciting for prostitution public database. Basically, is this a list basically of John Does and pimps? I mean, what would this entail?
So one of the things that we tried to tackle after visiting different places throughout the state and looking at the issue of human trafficking is the issue of supply and demand. We know that there is one simple rule. There's no demand. There's no supply. Humans buying humans for the purpose of sex is a heinous act that occurs with repeat offenders. And a study by the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention found that 70% of sex buyers want to stop. And then we have a coupling 2011 study that was done at Boston University that asked sex buyers what would get them to stop purchasing sex. And it was some form of public registry. Now, that's not what is contained within this bill. This is a database of pimps and johns, those that purchase sex and those that that pimp individuals in this universe. This is already public information that is out there in one place.
Okay, no, because I was going to say, was this for just law enforcement or anybody could see that database? Anybody has access to it?
Anyone has access to it. And I think that one of the things that really kind of puts this into perspective, that human trafficking is one of the largest growing criminal enterprises in the world. In fact, it's actually it's second to the drug trafficking trade, and it's a $32 billion industry, and it's growing every single day. It's set to outpace drug trafficking. And there are 40 million victims of human trafficking in the U.S. today. And worst of all of that, half of those victims are under the age of 18. And we do need to take bold steps to ensure that we're stopping this and that the state of Florida is closed for business in sex trafficking. And I think that is part of what this bill goes to do.
You know, there's a fundamentally deeper question on this issue. And, you know, on a personal note, is something that I remember covering as before my job before this, I was in Las Vegas. And so, of course, I want to bring up, this issue that exists in Nevada where sex work in some parts of Nevada is legal and it has a lot of protections for the female workers, from health care protections to, of course, you know, personal safety protections. Do you ever think that there'll be a time when when you talk about prostitution, that it would ever even be considered as a thing to be made legal in the state of Florida to give the workers protections?
I mean, we are a state that is hugely diverse, right? And I think that I don't know that we are going to get to that time. But if I had a crystal ball, I would also know how to solve a lot of the issues that exist in our state and in our world. But I think that I heard from a lot of the consensual sex workers and that industry, and we worked really hard to try to sit at the table to come up with a policy and a measure that would include some of the things that they brought, because it is important that we make sure that everyone is represented. And who better to know what's going on in that world and in that industry than consensual sex workers, because they do exist. And it is a piece of the puzzle. And so we sat down with a lot of those folks, some of which were not very keen on the database. But we do believe that this is important. And I would say, in terms of, you know, some of the regulating that industry and legalizing or decriminalizing prostitution, does create a black market for that.
With those workers, what are their concerns about the database? What have they said about the database?
I think that if they, I think at the time when the bill was first introduced, it was a registry. And they did not want to, I believe, as one consensual sex worker said, did not want to put people that she worked with and for in a place where they would not continue to utilize her services. And I think that that is, you know, a very valid point for her and for her livelihood. However, that is not what this bill contains. I think that, again, when we look at the numbers and we talk about human trafficking and what that means in our state, that Florida is third in the country for human trafficking, we need to take bold steps to ensure that we're making Florida a non-slave state. And so one of the things that we did to when really working with the industry of consensual sex workers was making this database. It does have a sunset after 3 years and an OPAGA study after 2 years. We're not looking to go after individuals just for the sake of going after individuals and embarrassing people into not purchasing sex. We have a duty and an obligation to create laws that work to move the needle and make a difference. Again, that's what this, I believe, component does. We have studies that show purchasing of sex occurs. However, 89% of those purchasers of sex say if there was some form of a public registry, they would not engage in those behaviors. The supply and demand would dictate if people aren't buying it, we're not going to utilize
it. I wanted to, before we finish up here, is come back to another aspect of the law, which is training that would be required for law enforcement, hotel workers, and massage parlor workers in identifying signs of human trafficking. Real quickly, how would that training work? Who's administering it?
So absolutely, hotels, law enforcement, massage parlors, it would be under the department, DBPR. If those trainings aren't being done in hotels, a hotel will be fined $2,000 a day.
I'm sorry, you said DBPR?
The Department of Regulation for the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And if those trainings aren't being done, hotels could be fined up to $2,000 a day. And those fines will be given to the direct support organization that's created under this bill, under the Attorney General's auspices, to provide really life-changing support and services for survivors of trafficking. There's a huge dearth of services for survivors of trafficking. We know that there are about 20 beds for therapy from Key West to West Palm Beach. We simply don't have enough to deal with some of the really intensive needs that these survivors have.
Are you confident that Governor DeSantis is going to sign the bill, or at least he won't veto it?
I am hopeful that the governor, along with, you know, I believe that the governor has a bold sense for protecting Florida's most vulnerable. And again, Florida will not be a slave state. I believe that, and I am hopeful that the governor signs this bill. I know that this is something that we worked on with the attorney general. Again, a lot of the components of this bill would be under her auspices. And I believe that Florida should be closed for business for human traffickers, and making sure that we continue to take bold steps to end what is occurring here. And we have some incredible, incredible opportunities in our state with, like we said, the Super Bowl, the national championships that are coming here, NASCAR, some of our incredible, incredible tourist attractions. One of the things that should not occur here is slavery, and we're working to make sure that that's not the case.
We've been talking with Democratic State Senator Lauren Book, representing Florida's 32nd district. Again, new legislation awaiting the governor's signature, again, addressing the issue of human trafficking in the state of Florida. You can learn more about it at our social media at WLRN Sundial. Senator Book, it's been a pleasure, always. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, still to come, a one-day film festival this weekend looks at mental health from different perspectives. We spoke with the Miami director about his movie, Terms of Us. That's coming up next on Sundial.